Morning. Good morning, everyone. Glad you guys came back. I'm not wearing my State Farm this week, so something a little different. Allstate, that's true. That's a good point. I'm playing both sides here, both sides. So we're continuing on with our leadership 101 principles for Christian leaders. And again, just to recap, we talked about the first one was keeping your focus on God. Second one was check your motivation. We talked about that, why you started and why you're continuing. Walking in integrity, very important. And then also be the type of person that people want to follow. And then we coupled that with be teachable last week. So we kind of breezed through the first five. And now we're going to slow down a little bit because I think these next ones are a little bit, they require a little bit more in depth. So today we're going to talk about having a council of people that you can lean on. Or, as the associate pastor coined this term, and I'm going to steal it because I love it so much, having a board of directors. So, put the slide up real quick. So, what does it mean to have a board of directors? What is a board of directors, right? So, I looked this up, and this source comes from corporatefinanceinstitute.com. A board of directors is a group of individuals who are responsible for overseeing the management and direction of a company or organization. In a broad sense, a corporate board of directors acts as a fiduciary for shareholders. The board has several key roles and responsibilities that include hiring and overseeing senior management, monitoring financial performance, ensuring compliance with legal and ethical standards, providing guidance and support to the management, representing the interest of the shareholders, and setting the overall direction and strategy of a company. So, as you can see, there's a broad different responsibilities when it comes to board of directors. What type of people are selected for that? So there's two types of people that are selected for the board of directors in these positions. They're known as internal or external. Pretty simple. Internal people work for the company. External people do not work for the company. Why? Why is this important? Because you want internal people that work for the company because they have skin in the game, right? It affects them. What happens to that company directly affects their overall employment, their money, whatever it is, right? It affects them. But you also want external people because you want people who are experts in their field for something, and it doesn't necessarily affect them. It affects them in such a way that where their name is on it, right? So when it comes to external, you want people who are experts in their field, but also understand that if the company goes down, then that's their name on the company as well. And it directly impacts them as well. Why am I talking about this in such corporate terms? Because if we bring it down to the personal level as leaders, we also need a board of directors. And we need two type of people on it. We need internal people, and we need external people. If you're married, the internal person should be your spouse, number one. Right? This hit me hard because I had to think about this for my own personal life. I'm like, oh, you know what? God, I didn't really consider that. But there's no person that's more affected by decisions that you make than your spouse if you're married. 100%. They should be on your board of directors. You should listen to their counsel. They should have a say in the things that happen because it's going to directly affect them. If you guys do well, everybody does well. If you make poor decisions, it's going to bring down the family, right? Also, internal players, maybe not full-fledged board members, but your children, right? They should have a say in some of the things that happen. It's going to affect them as well. Now, I'm not saying 2-year-old little Timmy needs to tell you what kind of house you need to buy. Timmy, do you think we should buy this house? No, that's not what I'm talking about right here. All right? Let's not base all of our life choices on somebody who poops their pants and drinks milk all day. Right? This is very important. I know that sounds like a good time to some of you people. Drinking milk and pooping your pants and passing out, it's a great time. It's a great night, right? But that's not what we're going to base our decisions on, right? But it is important to consider your children. Again, maybe not full-fledged voting members, right? They're not the ones who are going to be directing what you're going to be doing as a family or in your life, for example. But your decisions also directly affect them. So they should also be people that you consider whenever you make a decision and put on your board, right, and speak it to your life. Close friends, people that have been there through thick and thin. Those are also people you should consider. external members. These could be people like mentors, right? People that you look up to, that you know, pastors or counselors or people that you know for a long time, like your parents or something like that. These can be external. They have some skin in the game too, because you do well, it looks well on them. But at the same time, your actions are separate and distinct from theirs. If your life caves in, they're going to be like, I feel sorry for you, but that is also your life, right? So, but you need those kind of experts, right? Because you need people who have done, been there, done that, right? If I'm, and a good tidbit on this, I love this part right here, that you can't just have internal, all internal, and you can't just have all external. There's always a mix. Why? Because you have all internal board members, then everybody's going to be saying the same thing that's going to affect them. There's no outside perspective. There's nothing to bounce anything off of. And it's true. And some of you guys, you're going to be lockstep, but you may be lockstep and falling down. And there's no good counsel on that. Same time, they can't be all external. You need people who are actually going to be affected by those decisions to have a way and have a position on that as well. And as a leader, we need to make sure we're surrounding ourselves with both. That's what good companies do. That's what successful companies do. And we should do the same thing. And also, a little tidbit, when I was looking this up, I thought it was pretty interesting. Did you know that board members and businesses change out on average every 5 to 8 years to respond to current events and challenges that they're facing in the company? Why am I bringing that up? Because the board members you have today may not be the board members you need 5 years from now. You're going to change. You change. Your circumstances in life change. Where you are in your life changes. So where you may be struggling in one area right now, 5 years from now, you're great in that area. You don't need necessarily a person to speak into your life about that particular area. Now you have another challenge that you're facing. You need to bring somebody else in that, please.
I was just going to ask, the spouse is a permanent member of the board, right?
They should.
They don't rotate? Okay.
They should be. That is a great question, though. Like I love your thought process on that. Right? Good question. We got to be clear, right? They should be a permanent member, right? And what I love about this, too, because when you're thinking about this, and I want to be very clear, when you think about this, you should be thinking about your own life, right? You should be, look, whenever you read the scripture, it should be a mirror, not a sword that you're wanting to hammer somebody with, right, or slice somebody else with. So when I look at this and when God is speaking this to my life, I have to do evaluation for myself. Not, am I on the board member of this person, right? That's not how you're looking at this. You're looking at it, hey, is this person on my board? And that's how you have to approach the scripture. That's the reason why we read it that way. But it's also, keep that in mind. What you have right now, people on your board, besides your spouse and kids, right? They should be rotating depending on what you need in that area. And also, this is a actual thing that you have to purposely do. This doesn't happen by accident. People that are brought onto a board, they're not surprised that they're on this board. They were interviewed, they were asked questions, and they were brought on and hired, right? Usually elected by shareholders. If you guys have invested in any kind of company, stocks or anything like that, you get those little emails or communications that say, hey, we're electing this new person to the board, and they have a whole bunch of different candidates, and you decide, however they do it, you decide who you're gonna elect to the board. USAA does this, a lot of different other publicly traded companies do this as well. Obviously, every single public company, if they're publicly traded, by law, they have to have a board of directors. Private companies don't, but a lot of them do. Whether or not they have to or not, they usually have one because it just makes sense. You cannot lone wolf it, or I should say, you shouldn't try to lone wolf it. You can. A lot of people try this all the time, but you shouldn't. I got some interesting stats from an online market data reporting company. GetNux.com. It says companies that promote collaborative working environments are 5 times as likely to have high-performing employees. 5 times. 64% of workers prefer collaborating with teams because they feel it results in more successful outcomes. Over half. 95% of employees believe that a lack of teamwork affects overall success. I know some of you guys feel that, right? I feel that sometimes when I'm working, if we're not working well together, it's just not going to be as good. Conversely, if you are working well together, you get better results. And this is my favorite stat right here. Groups outperform individuals over 80% of the time and can produce better results as well as satisfaction and morale. 80% of the time. Now, that does mean 20% of the time you can do it better by yourself, right? And there's actually a study that when I was doing this research, it says that actually the simple tasks that are done are usually done better by individuals. As it develops in complexity, that's when groupthink becomes better, right? You can still get to the same answer as an individual that you get as a group. You just get there faster when you work together. It's like the old saying, right? If you want to go far, you go with a group. If you want to go fast, you go alone. That's the way it is. God designed us that way. And God designed us for community and for working together. And if you look at Leviticus, where Moses was getting instruction from God of how the Israelites are supposed to live, the big benefit that they got from being a community and being in a group was safety and protection, right? You were safe as long as you were part of that community. But if you were excommunicated, then you're on your own. You have to figure that out. There's no safety with that. It's the same today. Even though we don't want to admit it, in this day and age, especially in the Western culture, we tend to have a much more individualistic view on how we should live. You hear the terms all the time, self-made man, or pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. Those are thrown around as badges of honor instead of what they really are, self-deception and carnality. Nobody is self-made. It just simply isn't true. We may not get the kind of help that we think we should get, but we do catch some breaks. Arnold Schwarzenegger gave a speech about this, and I love this. This very topic, he was talking about the issue of a self-made man and how people always told him that he was self-made. He came over to this country with nothing, and he just made it all the way to the top. And he says there's no such thing. He says so many people helped him out. When he first got here to this country, he had nothing but a couple of bags. And he got an apartment, and he went to the Gold's Gym that somebody invited him to go to, and he started working out, and he saw these people, these great people, like Mr. Olympia and, you know, Mr. World, Mr. Universe, or whatever. And the very first Christmas that he had in this country, people came over from the gym that he met and he knew and brought him all kinds of dishes and furniture and stuff that he didn't even have. And he was like, I never had that stuff. So they brought it to me because they knew I needed it. And not just that, whenever he finished competing, he said, you know, I decided I didn't want to work out anymore. I want to do the competition for, you know, Mr. America or Mr. Olympia or whatever. So I decided to switch into acting, and somebody gave me a break for there. He said, so there's no such thing as me being self-made. There was somebody that helped me along the way every single time. And it's the same way with us. We like to think that, you know, we do it all on our own. Believe me, I had this same kind of thought for the longest time that, you know, I would never want to accept help from people because I didn't want people to say later on, he made it because of X, Y, Z, because I did this. And what's so funny about that thought process, not only was it stupid, but it was totally wrong. I had help my entire life. I mean, if you go back, if we just take it simply, if you go back to when you were a baby, you would not even survive your childhood if somebody wasn't taking care of you, right? You wouldn't get through elementary school. You wouldn't get through high school, right? Now I get it. There's some people who've had a lot more challenges in life than I've had. You know, I grew up in a two-parent home, right, and pretty much middle class, so it was awesome. A lot of people who had to struggle a lot more than I have, and so some of you guys may be tempted to think, hey, I had to go it on my own. But even you didn't go it on your own. There was somebody that was looking out for you. And again, it may not have been what you thought it should be, but somebody helped. And that is why the deception comes into place when we think we should do it on our own. We can't. There's no way we can achieve the things that we achieve by ourselves. We just simply weren't made that way. And the enemy wants you to believe that you can go it alone. Why? Because it's so much easier to pick you off when you're by yourself. That's why there's safety in numbers, right? That's why you see a lot of animals in the wild when they hunt together. They stay in packs because it is so much easier to pick someone off when they're by themselves. And that's what the enemy wants. He wants to create division. He wants to create separation. He wants you to think that I got this on my own. I don't need anybody to speak into my life. I've got this far by myself. I will continue on by myself. And then what's going to happen is you're easy pickings for the enemy to come take you out. So you want to do that. Also, trying to do it all by yourself leads to burnout and cynicism. I'm going to read from Exodus 18. It's It's a really good story. I love this one. This is Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came and visited him. So it's verse 13 I'm going to start at. The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, "What is it this that you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone as judge while all these people stand around you from morning till evening?" Moses answered him, "Because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions." This is the trap that a lot of leaders fall into, a lot of us. When God gives us a word as leaders of a ministry or whatever it may be, we tend to think, okay, God told me I have to do this, so I have to do it by myself. And what Moses did here is tell Jethro that same thing. God gave me this, so I have to do it. Moses is smart, though. He took counsel, and he listened. Listen what happens next. Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you're doing is not good." Verse 18, "You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen to me, and I will give you some advice. And may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him. Teach them his decrees and instructions and show them the way that they should live and how they are to behave. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges over the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you, the simple cases they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. And if you do this and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain and all these people will go home satisfied." He gave him some advice. It's safe to say that he was an external board member for Moses. He saw something was going on. He was like, "Hey, man, I get you heard from God. And I'm not knocking that. That's awesome. But maybe have you considered this?" And in Moses' humility, he listened. And some of us, we got to take that lesson, right? Just because God told you to do something, you're the leader, I'm the boss, doesn't mean somebody can't come to you and say, "Hey, there's a better way than what you're doing. You can't do it all yourself. Have some people work with you." Verse 24, Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel and made them leaders of the people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for all people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Then Moses, verse 27, then Moses sent his father-in-law on his way, and Jethro returned to his own country. First of all, that last verse is hilarious to me. And I decided whether I was trying to go back and forth whether or not I should include it, but I thought it was funny. Yeah. Right? Not only did he get his advice like, "Cool, thank you, appreciate it, Pops, time for you to go." Yeah. Right? Yeah. That's a good lesson. Yeah. Sometimes they don't need to stay. Yeah. Yeah. Right? Why was Jethro there? He came to see how everything was going. He laid some advice down and he said, "Appreciate it, Pops, time for you to go." Because what could have happened is Jethro would be like, "Oh man, he listened to that one advice. Let me give some more advice. Maybe you should do this." Yeah. You know, and they start getting a little bit too much. "All right, bro, you had one good idea. All right. That'll mean every idea you're going to have is going to be good." Right? So it is important. I thought that was very funny. And there's a reason it's in scripture.
Yeah. I think a very powerful point is made here that God spoke to Moses. I mean, the scriptures say that God spoke face to face with Moses. In other words, clearly, he said, "I speak to my other prophets in dreams and visions. I speak very clearly to Moses." In other words, when he heard from God, it was like us talking, okay? Yet, and God could have given those same instructions to Moses, but he didn't. He used Jethro, his father-in-law, and there's that you can come up with a whole plethora of other things, like he had to be humble to listen, he had to be teachable, and also it shows that God doesn't want us trying to be independent, but being interdependent is how we can bring about his purpose and his will in a more effective way.
Because the best thing about that is Jethro knew, right? And he told him, hey, this is my advice for you. But Moses had a choice. He could have not listened to it and went on and continued doing what he's doing, you know, fighting the good fight, standing there day and night, trying to do everything himself. Our responsibility when we're on somebody's board is just to give them the advice. I love this about God, because if he tells us a word to give to someone, our only responsibility is to tell that person. After that, what they decide to do with your advice is on them. You're released from that. If they go and they crash and burn because they don't want to listen, that's on them. And that's something they have to deal with God. But our responsibility, if we're on somebody's board, is to listen, right? Now, again, if they're on your board, they're on your board for a reason. This is, again, this is intentional. This is deliberate action. You go to people and you say, I know it's kind of awkward, but you should go to people and be like, hey, I want you on my board, right? It seems weird at first, but I think people will understand, especially if you're picking the right people. They're going to speak into your life. And if those people are on your board and they're speaking to your life, then you automatically should lend an ear to them, because you've chosen that person for a reason. That person has something that you admire about them. They have an outside perspective. They're an expert in some area, or they have skin in the game. That's the reason why you listen to them, right? Don't just automatically dismiss them because you think, oh, right? That's somebody, you do that to somebody who's not on your board, not to your board members. Those are people you listen to. And Moses did. And again, after he listened, he's like, it's time for you to go, bro. I appreciate it. Good advice. Now go. The principle here is clear. You got to delegate to people who you can trust. Moses didn't just delegate this to anybody. He has specific criteria, what we call find a way people. I love this because I had a mentor in the Air Force, and he told me this truth, and I always remember, and I take it with me, and I pretty much co-opt. It's now my own. But he's the one who told me this particular phrase. He's like, there's two types of people in the world. There's people that will find a way, and there's people that will find an excuse. You want people that are going to find a way, right? You give a task to someone, there's two different responses. Oh, I can't do it because I got this and this going on. I can't do that. Or I tried, but this came up and all this stuff. But people that are find a way, they'll just come back to you, got it done. And you don't know the 5,000 hoops they had to jump through to get it done. They just got it done. Those type of people you want in your corner. Those people that should be on your board, because they're going to find a way to get it done. Now, I'm not disparaging people, because if we look at ourselves, we turn that lens back on us. We've all been both of those people. All of us have been the type of find a way people and also the find the excuse people. I can speak for myself. I've been that person, right? For some people, they'll come to me. I'm like, oh, I can't do it, you know, and I got a million excuses why I can't do it. All of them may be valid. I'm not saying they're not valid, but the type of people you want on your board are going to be the find a way people. Things are going to be difficult, especially if you're busy. If you go back to business analogy, things are going to be challenging in the business environment. Things are going to change. If you look at COVID, that's one of the biggest disruptors that happened in business, right? All of a sudden, everything was going well, and then the entire world shut down. How do you flex? You can't just say, oh, that's it. That's not how it works. You got to find a way, and those are the people you want in your corner that's going to find that way. You want people that's going to be in your corner when things get tough. There's people that's going to run away. They're always going to be like, hey, you think they're in your corner until some bad stuff happens. Then all of a sudden, they're like, eh. No, you aren't who I thought you were. And then they're gone. Or they give up on you. Those are not the people you want on your team. And also, you don't want to be the type of person. You don't want to be a fair-weather fan, to say. If somebody comes to you and they say, there's something about you I admire and I want you on my board, take that to heart. Understand that you may be an external member for them, but your name, your reputation's on the line. Whatever they need, if it goes down, your name's on that, right? And if they do well, your name's on that as well. So you want those people in your life who aren't going to run when the times get tough. Because believe me, in this walk, in this world, in the ministry that you're going to be called to do, things will get tough, and they're going to be hard. And as a leader, you need to surround yourself with people who are going to be around no matter what. Another key truth in this passage that I love is Moses didn't micromanage. He set clear expectations. You do the work, and if it rises to a certain threshold, then you come get me, and then I'll do it. There's nothing worse than asking people for help and then dictating every step of the way they need to do it, right? Yeah, the easiest analogy is this, and I'm gonna pick on my wife a little bit, but I love her though. I love you, but baby, don't take personal to this. But it's like when I want people to put the dishes they're dirty in the dishwasher, right? Oh, but not like that though. I need you to put this. And our kids are the worst because kids don't give a crap. You could tell them 500 times if this is where they need to go, right? And what's gonna happen is they're just gonna put them in there any kind of way they want. Right? But you got to step back and sometimes you got to think, what is the ultimate goal that I'm trying to accomplish here? The goal is I want these dishes clean. Right? I'm using this as a simple example. And I do it too. So what is the goal? I want the dishes clean. So let's put the dishes in there. We got it. Right? Now, however that falls out, and as long as you're not putting like utensils in a slot where it's going to fall down to the bottom, that, you know, then we're okay. But if they get in there somehow, then we're making progress. But I think what we do as leaders, we let good be the enemy of great. And it doesn't have to be that way, right? If what they're doing is accomplishing what needs to be done, what God called, it doesn't matter if they do it the way you would have done it. Is it getting done? And that is the goal. We cannot let good be the enemy of great. So he let the expectations, let them know, and then let them do it. I guarantee if Moses would have just walked by and listened to some of the decisions he made, like, man, I probably wouldn't have done that. I'd probably did this, right? But he let those people, he trusted them, he trusted the God that was in those people and let them make the decisions. And that's what we have to do as leaders, because we're going to wear ourselves thin if we're trying to do every single thing because it has to be done this particular way. We can't do that. We have to trust God to bring the people in our lives that are going to help us, and then let them do it. Set expectations, set clear guidelines, but then let them do it. That's the only way we're going to get through this life, because we can't do it on our own. And I want to finish this off real quick by reading an excerpt from Brant Hansen's book, Blessed Are the Misfits, and I love this. He says, as an introvert with a long, even brutal list of negative church experiences, it is exceedingly easy for me to decide to try to go it alone, to avoid Christian community, but I simply mustn't do this, and here's why. I need Christian community because my ability to justify myself is a force of nature. It's nearly unstoppable. We're all this way. We tend not to question our motives. We don't question our desires. We want what we want, and we will reshape reality to fit it. I wrote extensively about this in my previous book, which you should purchase, he says this, called Unoffendable, which is also a good book I've read. You should read that as well. Left in isolation, then we will write narratives in our head that will always feature us as the good person or as the victim. Humans are absolutely masters at this. There's a famous Bible story of David, a man after God's own heart, Acts 13:22, who spots an attractive young woman. He is king, so he gets to have what he wants. And he has lots of women, but now he wants her. He takes her, and he has her husband, a loyal soldier, sent to the front line to die so he can have her to himself. He does, and he justifies it all in his head. Somehow it works out where it's all okay. It takes a crafty, wise friend to get him to actually see how inexcusable what he did really was. We rewrite reality to fit what we want. It takes other people, wise people who love us, to snap us out of it. Left to myself, I will eventually justify anything, and you will too. We need honest people around us who understand this and who are willing to puncture our self-righteousness. Any comments? Have for this week. Come back next week, and we'll talk about some more of this stuff. Thank you.